The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray. A little later in the show, I'll be joined by Ali Moreno as we look back on La Liga's action today. But we will be starting in the Premier League because there is a big derby coming up this weekend in Manchester. It is Man City against Manchester United. In terms of the table, well, there's 19 points between the sides. City in first, as you can see, and United in fourth, having played the same amount of games. But when you actually look at the head-to-head between the two sides in their last nine games, well, it's even Stevens right now. It's four wins for each side and one draw as well. And in terms of Man City's record under Pep Guardiola at home against Manchester United, it actually favours United, as we're now welcoming Craig Burley and Nadim Anour. And I'll start with you, Nadim, with those stats that we're seeing and the results in recent meetings between the two. How worried is City, or should they be, about Manchester United?
I don't think they should be worried as such, but they do have to take into account the fact that United appear to be quite comfortable playing at the Etihad, which seems like a crazy thing to think. Like, to the fact that United have won four out of the last six games at the Etihad under whilst Pep Guardiola's been in charge, it just seems crazy, because in that time, you know, City have been competing for titles alongside a couple other sides, and whereas United haven't really been part of that sort of motion, yet still they find a way to get a result. But I think I like the setup of this game, just because, you know, City are obviously only 3 points ahead of Liverpool now, and United are fighting really hard for that fourth place position. So it's going to be one of those derbies of old where there's a lot on the line for both sides, whereas in the past, it hasn't necessarily always felt that way. But I think, as I say, City will acknowledge it, go into it, try and take it as seriously as possible, and understand that, you know, between now and the end of the season, the quest for perfection is going to be key, because if they can achieve it, then they win the league.
Craig, why do you think it is that Manchester United have had this success over City in recent years?
Well, I think, you know, for most part, Man City have completely dominated these games from a football perspective, but they have made mistakes, and they have found a team in United that have sat in very deep, and then just taking their chance with, you know, a mistake at the back, or, you know, a good counter-attack and a bit of pace up front. So I think that's the main reason. I mean, some of the games, thinking back, that United have won, I think, you know, City fans had to sat there thinking, how the hell did that happen? So I think City have to guard against that, obviously, at the weekend, that they are going to dominate, that they are a much superior side. But they have been caught out, as you mentioned, quite a few times in these derbies. So I think that's enough to spur the team talk on before the game. That if City cut out the basic errors at the back and they make sure they have a good shape and, you know, don't make any silly decisions defensively, then the chances are they're going to win this game. So, and maybe we'll see some changes to Ranić's team to try and sort of combat and play a counter-attacking style.
Just find that yourself, Nadim, that sometimes it's been a bit of a head-scratcher as to how City have lost out to United in these games.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But as Craig's sort of alluding to there, there's a sort of aspect about United that I think it's, to some extent, going to the Etihad and just taking on that underdog role really well. And with some of the personnel that they have up front, they have a threat in behind. And I think that's one of the keys, I believe, in terms of doing well against Man City, is being able to stretch the game. If you have no out ball where you can get City running back towards their goal out of shape, and, you know, without like the true sort of discipline you have when everything's in front of you, then it poses a far different threat, because there's tons of times when you'll see, like, I think there was a goal maybe in the derby last year at the Etihad, United are on the break, maybe it's Rashford down the left-hand side, then they end up playing somebody and then there's a goal and you'd be encouraged. But if they put up a side whereby they're going to try and just outplay them, keep everything in front of City, then I think it plays into their hands. But as we've seen in the recent games, you know, the Spurs game and to a certain extent the goal they conceded against Fulham in the FA Cup for Man City, like, there is space in behind them, but if you're not going to have players who prepare to try and run into it, then you face a far tougher challenge than, say, attempting to do just that. So it'll be an interesting sort of tactical battle, I believe, on come Sunday.
Nate, go on, Craig.
Yeah, I think, Kay, that it's not like Guardiola has to go back to the Derby matches for a reminder to his players. He's only got to go back to Southampton away recently, which wasn't a defeat, but it was a counter-attacking game from Southampton. And then the biggest one was the Spurs game at the Etihad recently. I mean, it was brilliant finishing from Spurs, but if that wasn't a smash and grab, I don't know what is, because City completely outplayed them. But they didn't defend particularly well, certainly for the first goal, when they were so high up, and I think it was Diaz that got caught. And obviously at the end they got caught out as well after getting back with the penalty. So there's some really fresh in the memory reminders for these players that yeah, they're likely to dominate, but only recently they've had the backside bitten by sort of switching off at the back and paid the ultimate price against Spurs, one of the reasons that we actually have a Premier League title race back on the cards.
Yeah, let's get to that then, shall we? You mentioned Ruben Dias getting caught out there. He can't get caught out in this game because he's not going to be available for the next 4 to 6 weeks, Nadim. Let's talk about the impact of that and the impact it could have on the title race if they don't come away with a positive result in this one.
Yeah, I think the nature of this result itself, it offers huge encouragement for Liverpool. But the fact is, you know, worst case scenario, if City do lose and Liverpool win, then they're on the same points. And it still, in some ways, will come down to that head-to-head, potentially, in a month's time. But it's important to just keep applying pressure. Whoever's playing first, try and apply that pressure to the opposition. Make them have to sort of sit there and say, well, now we have to get something. And City, you know, they're very capable. You can see there from the odds, like the bookmakers, they do get things wrong sometimes. But it's fair enough to think that City are favourites to win a title when they've won three of the last four. And to talk about the Ruben Dias situation, I think that is a big blow, because one thing about Pep this season, he's liked to rotate those guys that play centrally, and I think the Nathan Ake miss as well. I think he's out for a little while. I think that could also be key, because they're down to two seniors now, and the hope is for him that I imagine they don't get suspended, they have no more injuries, because they're going to have to rely upon them to play, defend at the highest standard, because I think in times gone by, when they've tried to go for titles and so on, they've had to mix things up a little bit, throw Fernandinho back there, and for as good a footballer as he is, he's not as dominant in that position as the other people who were there. So I think it's going to be a big blow for them. But the hope, as I say, is that they can still maintain a level of performance with the guys who are left, because they are capable. But the drop down after that, you know, it's quite a big one.
We talk about that, Craig, the outcome for the title race if it doesn't go City's way. But then if you look at it on the flip side as well, if it doesn't go Manchester United's way, what does it mean for them in the race for the top four?
The struggle continues. It's just simple. It's as simple as that. And obviously, a result for them would be huge, absolutely huge. But yeah, they're in a real bun fight for that fourth spot. A conversation I don't think many of us were having at the start of the season. Even though most of us felt that Solskjaer certainly wasn't the man, we didn't envisage them having the problems up until when he was sacked, and even so, the problems after he was sacked seem to be even sort of more problematic. It's not only poor performances. There has been, as you well know, numerous and enormous daily leaks coming out of that camp, and the most recent one is the so-called, some of the players are not happy with Harry Maguire's form, which is quite ironic, really, when you look at all the games that they've played and all the games that they've got coming up, which is quite ironic, because tell me, who is in form at Man United to complain about anybody else's form? So, yeah, it's been one problem after another, but a result, of course, for them would be huge. I just don't see it happening. I think there's too much on the line here. I think the fact that City don't have that gap anymore is going to whet their appetite to go and get the job done. And we've seen Manchester United labour of late, even against, you know, relegation threatened Watford at home recently. Loads of chances, couldn't finish them off. And it's kind of been the story of a lot of their season. So I would be surprised if we're not looking at a City win come Sunday afternoon.
Is it a big win, Craig, or is it a tight win?
Well, I could see Man City taking two or three goals off them. I think United have looked a bit edgy defensively. And City will create chances, so I'm going to go for a 2 or 3 goal win for Man City.
Man City, obviously the favourites with the odds makers here. Nadim, what's your prediction?
You know, I'm in a different camp to Craig. You know, I'm still invested in the city, so I've got to be careful with what I say because people remember it. But it would be nice to see some goals in this game, and I think it's going to make a better fixture just because there's so much on the line now towards the end of the season. So I'm going to go for a high scoring. I'm going to say that City are going to win, but they're going to be a good few goals in this game, I reckon.
There will be. Yeah, come on, you know what? Before we move on, I need a score from you, Nadim. You can be a little bit... A little bit fence sitting, but I need a score.
I'll say 3-1 Man City. How about that?
All right, 3-1 Man City. Don't worry, you know that we'll always remind you of it here on ESPN FC. We will take a deeper dive looking ahead to the Manchester Derby. Big preview coming up on tomorrow's show. Make sure you join us then.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Continuing to dominate the headlines in England is the news of a consortium led by LA Dodgers Pars owner Todd Boehly set to lodge a formal offer to buy Chelsea FC in the coming days. It's a developing story as we now welcome in Gab Marcotti and Nader Manua to talk more about it. Gab, it's hard not to think of the likes of Kroenke and the Glazers, American ownership with multiple sports teams. Is this something that should concern and worry Chelsea fans?
Well, I mean, it depends on the type of owners. I mean, you know, you just mentioned Manchester United and the Glazers. And obviously, if you're a United fan, you're not going to be happy with what they did to the club, loading it up with debt. And obviously, we've also had a decade of shambles since Sir Alex left. But equally, contrast that with what Fenway Sports Group have done at Liverpool. And it's a completely different story. So I don't necessarily think that the idea of owners who've got different clubs and different sports is necessarily a problem. It depends whether they employ the right people. I don't believe you have all these great synergies that people like to talk about. But, you know, if you're a good owner, if you listen to your fans, if you're a good steward for the club and you appoint the right people, I don't think it matters if you also own an NFL team or an NBA team.
One thing we have seen, Gab, during Roman Abramovich's time in charge of Chelsea is that during the second half of his time there, Chelsea have been more financially conservative but still manage to have success. With a change in ownership, would this be sustainable?
That's a great question. And in fact, you know, when we look at the amount of money, around about £1.5 billion, close to $2 billion that Abramovich has put into the club in the form of loans rather than equity, but it's still, you know, him lending money to himself effectively. I think you'll note that the vast majority of that, certainly as a proportion of revenue, is in the early part of his tenure. Now, part of that has to do with financial fair play, which of course came in 2012. But I think also there is a sense that Chelsea are much more self-sustaining. You know, he took the club, elevated it to a global brand with his investment. Now that hasn't gone away. So I think that bodes well. I don't think the new owner needs to come in and say, well, I'm gonna have to spend hundreds of millions a year of my own money the way Abramovich did at the very beginning of his tenure. Obviously, it helps to be liquid. It helps to have deep pockets. And obviously, you know, you have to consider still the after effects of the pandemic. But I think there's a lot of scope for people to work with. And I also don't think that it's, you know, 100% necessary that they definitely need a new stadium like Arsenal or Tottenham got. I think that would help, but they've managed to do without it thus far.
Nadim, you've been at a club when there have been ownership changes. Is there any way that this could potentially go sideways?
I think Gab's discussed that very well, to be honest, because, you know, we can look at the Glazers and the like, but then that Fenway Sports Group sort of model at Liverpool, you know, people are happy with their ownership group, they're happy with their football club. So I guess for these guys coming in, it's just a case of, can you get a feel for, you know, what makes the club tick and what the club needs to go forward? But then I think the other interesting side to that is that new ownership coming in, surely you just don't want to do it exactly the same as the guy that was there before. You know, there's a lot of, I think there must be some level of sort of like ego within, this is how I want to run the club. And I think that's when the sort of insecurity comes in from players, staff and alike, because you don't know what you've been used to. It could potentially be very, very different going forward. And, you know, in some ways, rightly so, because somebody has invested a lot of money into the football club. So whether or not it could go wrong, I don't know. I think wrong essentially is subjective. But I believe that if you're buying into Chelsea Football Club, you have the best interests at heart, because if the club is successful, then you're successful as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes and see if the model's the same, because again, you know, the strategic decisions, like how many managers have been there across the years, you know, we can argue and say it's been too many, but then we can't argue about the amount of trophies that they've won in that time, the success that they've had in that time. So it'll be interesting to see what the perspective is of the prospective new owners as they come in, whether they will be as aggressive in terms of finding success as Abramovich was. And, you know, as I say, if Chelsea will be the new Chelsea, or if it's the same old Chelsea, but just a different name at the helm of it.
Well, there'll be a lot more talk on the changes at Chelsea on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. They take a deep dive on the subject. It's available now to download. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Sevilla played Friday night against a struggling Alaves side and didn't manage to take all 3 points from the game, and it's not helped them out too much in the fact that they are trying to challenge Real Madrid at the top of the table in a title fight. Meanwhile, this weekend, Real Madrid will take on Real Sociedad. One of the big stories there, not in the squad. Toni Kroos, injured. We'll see how that is, because it's going to get more talk about the PSG game. We're also seeing David Alaba coming back into contention. But when you think about this Toni Kroos news, neither of the coach nor the player can say that 100% he'll be in this PSG game.
Yeah, so let's break it down Real Madrid step by step and focus first on the Real Sociedad game. The importance of Sevilla dropping points today is that they missed an opportunity to put pressure on Real Madrid. And so now Real Madrid go and play against Real Sociedad, understanding full well, as they welcome Real Sociedad de Bernabeu, that, you know what, we have some leeway here. Where if there had been some pressure from Sevilla, if they had been Alaves, then it makes you think, if you're Real Madrid, okay, hold on a second, they're still here, they're still behind us, they're not going anywhere. When Sevilla loses points like this, it allows Real Madrid to breathe, and it allows Carlo Ancelotti to be conservative in his decision-making, to be able to look ahead to PSG and say, I think we can compete with Real Sociedad with these players on the field, and I can save Toni Kroos, and I can save this player or that player, and Valverde may not be ready, so I'm going to save him as well. So it gives you an idea as to how important a result is, or lack thereof, from Sevilla, and how that impacts the decisions from Carlo Ancelotti, from Real Madrid, and what they do against Real Sociedad, and what they do against PSG.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see. You know, we're going to see maybe the likes of Valverde, as he said, Camavinga. Mm-hmm. It's a chance for these players as well to show that they can be called upon.
The issue with Camavinga is that he has had opportunities this season and hasn't looked all that bad, but hasn't looked all that great either. It's, with Camavinga, you kind of think, well, he certainly cannot play the position on Casemiro because he's not tough enough on the tackle, he's not tough enough defensively, and he doesn't quite cover the ground with the same sort of aggression that Casemiro does. So then he's going to have to be in sort of a more playmaking role, what that would seem to be what Toni Kroos is or what Modric is. So it feels like if there was a chance for Camavinga to prove exactly where is it that he fits in this team, it would be against Real Sociedad because he can take the Toni Kroos position and then he can just be the guy that is distributing passes. If he's able to do that and the relationship between him and Modric works out, then I don't think Real Madrid has an issue. But also, Camavinga has been inconsistent enough to the point to where you kind of go, I don't know. I'm not convinced. I don't know if this guy is for real. It feels like at times he is, and then other times not so much. This will be a big game for him.
It could be an important week ahead for him as well, Gab, Camavinga.
It is. And look, I appreciate, you know, Ali speaking truth, but equally, Toni Kroos wasn't Toni Kroos when he was Camavinga's age. Casemiro certainly wasn't Casemiro when he was Camavinga's age. He's not going to be able to contribute that way. I think Real Madrid, hopefully, they should view him as somebody long term. And obviously, he's called on to contribute on this occasion. And he's going to have players around him helping him. This isn't Ancelotti's first rodeo. That said, you know, Real Sociedad winning again in midweek, you know, we kind of forgot about them a little bit, but I'd be wary of this game. David Silva scoring his first goal, Mika Merino looking good again. They're just a couple points outside the top four behind Barca and Atletico Madrid. So I think Real Sociedad will be way up for this game.
How do you think Ancelotti will be thinking going into it and with the trust that he's going to have to put in Camavinga? Because one thing we do often see with Ancelotti, particularly with this Real Madrid side, is he does like to keep the same players as much as he can.
He does. I think it's a question of chemistry. I mean, I think he's too nice a guy to come out and necessarily say things, but I think he feels that he wants to get the chemistry right to get through the season, and he necessarily hasn't had time to go and experiment with different systems because a lot of the, I think in his view, when players come in, they're not perfect like-for-like substitutes. You know, Valverde isn't going to come in and necessarily do what Kroos or Modric do. Isco or Rodrigo or Bale come into the front three for Vinicius and Asensio, they're not necessarily going to play the way those guys do. So you're going to have to tweak things. And that's been something that he's been wary of doing. But I think equally he knows the priority right now, as Ali said, you know, they have that little cushion there. If somebody's not 100%, this is not the game to risk them in. You do it against Paris Saint-Germain because obviously after that, there is no tomorrow.
Gab, yesterday we talked about the press in, well, the Catalan press basically, because there's a lot of talk about where Erling Haaland is going. So we talked about that side of things, because if you're reading your newspapers up in that side of Spain, this is what you will be reading. But if you're reading them in Madrid, you'll see this week that Diario AS said Haaland has said yes, but right now, that he doesn't want to wait, but he does want to go to Real Madrid. What's the latest that you've heard on this, Gab?
Well, a couple of things here. Obviously, Mino Raiola, who looks after Erling Haaland, hasn't been well. He's recovering. So I don't think there's actually that much that's necessarily going on in terms of negotiations for the future or whatnot. There's no question, I think, that Erling Haaland is going to leave in the summer because it's in his interest to leave in the summer because he's got that release clause. Were he to extend the deal or move the summer after that, and there was some kind of transfer fee involved, then it would likely be a lot more than his release clause, and that money would go to, or the difference between those two sums would go to Borussia Dortmund and not to him and not to his agent, not to his dad and the people around him. So whether it's Real Madrid or Barcelona, I still think Barcelona have a whole bunch of priorities. They have a whole, they're still in a big hole. They're digging themselves out of it financially. But to go and to commit those kinds of sums now all of a sudden when there are other areas in the side that they want to address, I don't know. I think it would be really, really pushing the boat out, unless they were to sacrifice maybe one of their players, one of the young stars, to raise money.
And yet there does seem to be belief in the Barcelona camp from the reports that we're seeing. They are looking more of an attractive option for a player like Haaland. Xavi's in there. There's young players now that are exciting and attracting. And then on the other side, you've got Real Madrid and maybe signing Kylian Mbappe and the stars that they've got there. If you were Erling Haaland and you had to pick between the two, where would you go?
Wow. First of all, I'd be very happy if I were Erling Haaland for all sorts of different reasons. Man, this is a tough one. I would say I would go to Barcelona. And the reason you just mentioned it, it's a youth movement going on at Barcelona that is not quite there at Real Madrid. And Real Madrid, for all the success that they're having currently in La Liga, and potentially they're going to go on and win the league, you also have the truth, and this is factual information. This is not me making it up. This is not for a matter of opinion or discussion. Is that their stars are getting older. And you're still depending on Luka Modric. You're still depending on Toni Kroos. You're still depending on Karim Benzema. So really, the only young star that you have out there is Vinicius Jr. and sometimes Rodrigo, if you consider Rodrigo a star. That's not quite the case at Barcelona. The challenge, though, at Barcelona, and Gab just alluded to it, is while we are excited about all these young players, at some point, one of these young players that is playing so very well is going to say, I like to start every game because I'm good enough to be starting every game and I'm sitting over here. Right. How are you going to keep all of these people together when you don't have the money to do so? How do you keep all this talent together and continue to be this young, up-and-coming team if you're struggling financially? That's a reality for Barcelona that is going to come to a head within the next couple of seasons or so. And that's, I think, where there's going to be an issue. You're going to have to make decisions in terms of what you invest and what you're willing to sell. Those decisions for Barcelona are going to be the key that would attract a player like Erling Haaland or not.
Gab?
I agree with what Ali says, but I also want to point out, I appreciate they're coming off three straight wins and some really, really impressive performances. But maybe we pump the brakes a tiny bit because there is a core of young talent there, undeniably. But you also have a bunch of other holes in your team that you need to plug because, at right back, you have Dani Alves or Sergiño Dest. Obviously, that's not a long-term issue. You've got Eric Garcia there. You've got Gerard Pique. These are situations where you've got players who are either going to be older. You've got Sergi Busquets still there. Either players who are getting older or players who maybe aren't that good. I think this is something that Haaland would want to consider as well. You could flip it around what you say about Real Madrid that say, okay, you forgot Kylian Mbappe, who of course Real Madrid fans take for granted is on his way. All of a sudden, Mbappe, Vinicius, Haaland front line looks pretty tasty and pretty young. You've got Camavinga and Valverde who will be eased into the midfield. And there's an enormous amount of free agents on the market this summer, as we know, from Pogba to Rudiger. And then you can go and spend some money there, too. So, I think Real Madrid can be retooled pretty quickly. So, it's a big decision for him. Hopefully, it'll be primarily a footballing decision that he makes. And I wouldn't rule out, too, that there could be other clubs from outside La Liga in the mix. In fact, I'd be shocked if there weren't other clubs from outside La Liga in the mix.
Oh, very, very exciting times for fans, for all football fans, and for Erling Haaland too, who seems to have his pick of the bunch. Super League time, we've got to talk about it because that word has reared its head again. It looks as though the failed European Super League project might be making a comeback. UEFA President Alexander Seferin said, first they started with this nonsense idea in the middle of the pandemic, and now I keep reading articles that they're planning something else in the middle of a war. They live in a parallel world. And that's across Barcelona, Juve and Real Madrid. This is the reports that they are pushing again. Javier Tebas, La Liga's president, said, we know this is what they're working on. If Andrea Agnelli doesn't explain it, he will be lying. Three teams met in his house. Every time I read about it, I get angry. I think they lie more than Vladimir Putin, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
Agnelli said, the Super League hasn't failed. I will not accept questions about Tebas. His statement speak for themselves. Gab, what's going on here?
So I watched this whole thing. This is being live streamed at the Financial Times sort of Business of Football conference. And it was, above all, I think, great theater. What happened was the three remaining Super League teams, Juventus, Real Madrid and Barcelona, they're lobbying the European Union really, really hard. They have this case, this antitrust case coming up before the European Court of Justice, and they're going to decide, or they expect them to decide once and for all, whether UEFA can be a competition organizer and a regulator at the same time, or whether they're acting in a monopolistic, anti-competitive way, and clubs should be allowed to do their own thing, while also playing in their own leagues and kind of picking and choosing what tournaments that they play in. Now, that verdict's not going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. Maybe in the spring of next year, I think, is the best estimate that people have. It could also happen that they decide to kick it down the road and not issue a verdict next year. But in the meantime, what the three remaining Super League clubs are doing is they're lobbying. They're lobbying the European Union hard. They sent a letter, a document outlining their reasons for the Super League, outlining their reasons why UEFA are in a monopolistic situation, outlining why they're not breaking away, but they want to work with UEFA. This is all that's going on, but I think what happened is when Sheffrin and Tebas spoke, they spoke before Agnelli. Maybe they thought Agnelli was going to come out and go and issue some sort of proclamation that something was happening. As it happened, it didn't. All Agnelli said was, we're just going to sit back and hope that the courts make the right decisions. And as far as lying in three teams meeting in Agnelli's house, well, we know who the three teams are. They're the three teams in Juventus, Barcelona, and Real Madrid, who, whether you're for the Super League or not, I think you have to admit, those guys, since the Super League collapse, have been on the level. They're the three clubs that are still 100% in the project, and then the three clubs that are still fighting by the courts.
For UEFA, it may feel like, you know, in the films, in the movies, when you think that the buddy's gone and then suddenly the buddy reappears again.
Well, maybe so, but I have to say, there is such an effort here to try to win on the court of public opinion. And I don't know that you achieve anything if you're Seferin or you're Tebas and you start talking about and equating and drawing a comparison, in the case of Tebas, to Vladimir Putin in the world that we live in today. That, honestly, you lose me. Whatever point you were trying to make, and then you draw a comparison or a parallel or some sort of connection to what's going on right now in the world, I don't think the European Super League is of that importance. And I think we have to keep that in perspective. And so, quite honestly, I don't think whether Seferin or Tebas or anybody who's against the European Super League do themselves any sort of favors by trying to make these connections to a pandemic and what's going on in the Ukraine and what's going on in Russia and Putin. And look, it's one thing to discuss whatever you think the merits are of a European Super League and whatever you may think of Juventus, Barcelona, and Real Madrid, right? We can have that conversation, and that conversation can be separate from what's going on in the world and the realities of war. The European Super League right now is not a reality. War is a reality. So to draw a parallel and draw a connection, I think, is unacceptable and quite frankly, is ignorant as well.
Yeah, not nice to see. Anyway, let's get you caught up on what's going to be happening this weekend in La Liga. Saturday, we'll start things off. We've got Real Madrid taking on Real Sociedad. Betis against Atleti could be an interesting to watch. Barcelona are away at Elche, and the match day will be round off with Athletic Club taking on Levante. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Hector Herrera has signed for Houston Dynamo. The Mexican national team captain is set to join in the summer as a designated player. Dynamo GM Pat Onstad had some glowing praise for the player, saying he's the biggest signing in club history, and I don't think anyone else is particularly close. Ale, what do you think of such a statement?
Well, I spoke to Pat Onstad earlier today, and he spoke about the ambition of the Houston Dynamo and what a signing like this, the sort of message that it sends across Major League Soccer. But I think what really stuck out to me is what it sends and what it says to the players inside that locker room is that this is the sort of club that we're becoming. We are willing to invest in players like Hector Herrera. And it's telling the players inside that locker room, look, this is the level that we want to be in. This is a conversation that we want to be in. You need to come up to this level as well. It clearly is a step forward for the Houston Dynamo. And what I think was also interesting in talking to Pat Onstad is the level of interest of Hector Herrera and his willingness to come to MLS and feel excited about coming to Major League Soccer, which I think is critical for any player that decides to make this decision to go from a place like Atletico Madrid to the Houston Dynamo. You have to be very willing to understand your responsibility within a club and what is expected of you, not only on the field, but off the field, and how you become a representative, not only of the Houston Dynamo, but the city of Houston as well. And in the conversations with Pat Onstad that he had with Hector Herrera and his agent, Gabriel Moraes, how willing and how keen Hector Herrera seemed to be about being a part of this new project, being a part of the future for the Houston Dynamo and building this project together alongside with the front office and the rest of the players in that locker room. It feels like it's a step forward for the Houston Dynamo. I also think that it's a necessary step for Hector Herrera in the sense that he needs to play. And while he's been playing over the last couple of weeks with Atletico Madrid, he hadn't been playing earlier on in the season. And that is the truth about where he is with Atletico Madrid. Not the last 3 weeks, but what we have seen over the last couple of seasons, and that Diego Simeone doesn't really trust him. It's been better over the last 3 weeks, but that has been because of injuries, because of COVID, because of necessity by Atletico Madrid. And in fact, it's that necessity that forces Hector Herrera to stay with Atletico Madrid up until the end of the season so that he can join the Houston Dynamo in the summer. Houston Dynamo are excited about it. It's a good fit for them. It's a perfect fit for them. It's a Mexican player, Mexican international playing in Houston. That also makes sense from all sorts of different perspectives. We'll see what kind of performance Hector Herrera brings to the Houston Dynamo. But on paper, it says that the Houston Dynamo are willing to take their level of competition to an elite part of MLS and a team that can actually compete for getting into the playoffs. And once they get into the playoffs, then think about a bigger picture.
Something we're going to see this weekend is what MLS looks like in Charlotte. Now, it wasn't the best start for Charlotte against DC United, losing out, but it is expected to be a record attendance. Maybe your wife shouldn't be watching this one because we know how much she wished that it had happened during your playing days and that you could have gone and played there. 75,000 could be in the stands. It's against LA Galaxy. This is definitely one to look out for over the weekend.
Of course it is. And whenever there's an expansion team in the local city, there's going to be a level of excitement, and the 75,000 are going to show up and they're going to support their team.
That's like Bernabeu and Camp Nou numbers, you know.
Right. So what is critical then is that this team shows up and plays for the 75,000 so that they give a performance, something that gives these fans a reason to be excited. Now, the novelty factor is going to be there for a while, but when these people show up, Bank of America Stadium, here we go. 75,000 people, they're expecting to see something. So it's such a great opportunity for a new club to make a statement. We don't know what the rest of the season is going to be for Charlotte FC, but for this game, if they have an outstanding game, it creates even more buzz. It creates even more interest. And now the people that come to the stadium, they leave the stadium thinking, man, can't wait to come back again. Can't wait to be part of this project going forward. Can't wait to be part of this experience. This was so great. Let's bring the kids. Let's bring the family. Let's bring everybody. When you say 75,000, that's a lot of people coming to watch an MLS game. And so for Charlotte FC, it's a unique moment and unique opportunity, and what a chance they have in continuing to build this buzz that has been going around the city of Charlotte.
Yeah, we'll see how they fare against LA Galaxy over the weekend. MLS coming up this weekend. All of the games that you will be able to see. Keep a lookout for Austin FC taking on Inter Miami. That will be on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. And there'll be a lot of talk about the weekend ahead, and no doubt some arguing over the signing of Hector Herrera, as there was the other day between Seven Hag
and
Football Americas.
They're always fighting about
something.
They love
something. A debate, and we love to watch it. Make sure you catch that on ESPN
Plus. Do we, though? Do we?
I do.
Oh, okay. All right.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of the show. Thank you so much for being with us. Should we answer some questions on Extra Time?
Sure, why not?
All right, we'll invite Nadim and Gab back to do so as well. All right, join us for Extra Time. Thanks for being with us on ESPN FC. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray and Ali Moreno in the studio. We've also got Gab Marcotti and Nadim Anua with us as well. And I cannot even tell you about the bromance that's been going on between Ali and Nadim before we were on tonight.
Look, there's chemistry. What can I tell you?
Sparks flying.
There's an energy you just cannot describe. You know, the same chemistry and energy that I do not have with Gab, I have with Nadim.
Brilliant.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, Gab. That is definitely worth a shake of the head as well. I concur. All right, question for Ali. Look, Gab's not happy with that.
That's all right.
Nor should he be.
We'll make up. Don't worry about it.
All right.
We'll have our moment.
I'm not sure where, but we'll find it. We'll find a spot. All right, Ali, since Pedri returned from injury in January, his level of play has been incredible. Mm. And with the year ending with the World Cup, do you think if he continues at this level with Barca and Spain, it will be fair to say what Xavi said, that he is the best player at his position?
Well, yes, it's a lot of ifs in that question, but yes, you have to imagine that if he has yet another outstanding international tournament, because he was outstanding in the Euros for Spain, he does that again in the World Cup and continues to develop at the rate in which he has developed over the last couple of seasons, then sure, I have no problem saying that Pedri will be the best in his position. He has been outstanding for Barcelona over the last couple of months.
All right. Nadim, who's the funniest teammate you've ever had?
The funniest? Probably, when he gets going, probably Micah Richards. You know, he's somebody that's very, very lighthearted with everything that he does. And the laugh that some people see when he's doing the broadcasting now, I've literally heard that for 15 years. So I'd probably say him, yeah, for sure.
That laugh from Micah Richards just makes everything even funnier. What about you, Ali?
Does it count what we do here as teammates?
I think so.
Yes, in ESPN FC?
Yeah. I know who you're going to say.
Well, I could say Dan, because he's naturally an outgoing guy. But Stevie is the funniest person you can be around, because he doesn't even try to be funny.
Nope.
It's just him being himself and the things that he does on a daily basis. Even how he eats soup is funny. That's how funny Stevie Nichol is. And it's not in a good way. You look at the guy playing golf and how he dresses at the golf course. That's funny as well. And he doesn't mean it to be a joke, which is actually what makes it the funniest guy I've been around.
How does he eat soup? I've not seen him eating soup.
Well, he puts this big old napkin thing because he
he does.
No, he does this thing, like he tucks it, he tucks the napkin like here, and he covers the whole, I don't know, the whole suit that he's wearing, because that's he doesn't want to get it on his glorious outfit that he's wearing, on the tie, you know, those combinations that he has for ties that are so well selected and well picked out. Stevie's great. It's fantastic to be around. And what makes him funny is that he doesn't even know he's being funny.
I know. Go check out yesterday's Extra Time on my Twitter feed to see Stevie acting as a referee. Very funny. And he is
Did you just plug your Twitter, your timeline there? Is that, you use Extra Time for that, Kay?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Shameless. All right, Gab. What has happened with UEFA's proposed punishment of Super League members? It seems since the thing collapsed, everyone has shrugged their shoulders and moved on.
Well, they got an injunction from a court in Madrid, because the Super League clubs put the case forward to the European Court of Justice, arguing that that effectively UEFA are a monopolist because they're a competition organizer and a regulator all at once, and so they got legal advice that until this case is resolved, they can't go ahead and punish them.
Next one is for Nadim. Start, bench, or drop? Okay. We've been getting a lot of these. But it's in the form of a club, Nadim.
Okay, here we go.
Manchester City, QPR, or Real Salt Lake?
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. What's the audience like? Is this a big American audience, or is it UK-based? I need to figure out who I need to be right now. Which one is it?
I
would never do that.
No. Just give us your honest answer. That's all we want. Honesty is the best policy, Nadim. That's all.
For God's sake.
Remember, we're available on YouTube worldwide.
Okay, emotionally, I'm going to have to do it through time spent. So start City, bench QPR, and then unfortunately leave out, drop RSL, because unfortunately I wasn't there for long enough.
That's such a cheat way out.
Yeah, yes.
Time spent. The longest.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Which means he'd drop us straight away.
Well, he would, like, yes.
We'd be sold, wouldn't we, here at ESPN FC?
Without a doubt. You're not even part of the conversation. Gone. Irrelevant. Move on. Whatever.
Well, whatever happened to the love, Nadim, didn't last long enough. I'm coming back to you, Gab.
Thank you. Gab, you shouldn't let him in. You should be like, no, that ship sailed. Right, next question is for Gab.
I am far too kind. You know, deep down, I can't deny my feelings. We know we have vowels on the end of our names. We have chemistry. Of course, Nadim has a vowel on the end of his last name, too. So what are you going to do?
Oh, vowels on the end of the name. Is that what it's about, is it?
Well, we also spend a lot of time together in various restaurants across Europe, in which Gab has told us various histories of those very restaurants.
And the Gab rules of what you can and can't eat.
Yes, you can and cannot order, but let's not go there, because that's a sensitive subject. If you go out with Gab, he won't allow you to order. He's going to order for you. I'm just saying.
Okay. I look forward to it, Gab. It's not happened yet. All right. Gab, are Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea as a trio right now as good as the Milan, Juventus and Inter sides of the early to mid-2000s?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would actually make the point that I'm not sure the Inter sides of that period were necessarily as good as Chelsea are now. So if you look at Liverpool, City and Chelsea, you're talking about, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea have won the Champions League very recently. All three have won the Premier League relatively recently. Inter, of course, didn't win Serie A for a very long time. So I would, you know, if you're looking at the cumulatively, I would probably put these three ahead of those two, because Inter around that time, I don't think we're on a par with the others.
There you go, Inter dragging the others down. dragging the others down just to please the Serie A fans. All right, Ale, what was it like as a player when David Beckham came to MLS? As a fan, I couldn't believe it was happening.
What it was is a guaranteed 100% sellout whenever David Beckham came into town. The level of attention that he commanded was beyond the soccer fan. He was a pop culture story, and he is a crossover athlete in that he garnered attention everywhere he went. So the Beckham experiment worked out for MLS in the sense that it provided the rest of us a bigger platform from which we could perform. Now, it was then the responsibility of the teams and the players on the field to be able to then bring those fans back whenever Beckham left town. It was a great success, and I think it marked a period in MLS in which it needed to take a step forward, and I think the league did.
Lastly, Nadim, how many derbies have you played in, and which one was the most memorable?
I think I actually played in four, I think it was four, and I won two of them. So the most memorable one was the one at Old Trafford in 2009. I think it, yeah, 2008, sorry. Because it was the game that was commemorating the Munich disaster. You know, if anyone doesn't know about that, it's worth Googling. And we had special edition shirts. It was like a really emotional game and so on. This is under Sven-Goran Eriksson. And we won, and it was the first time we'd won there, I think, in nearly 30 years or something like that. This was at Old Trafford. This was with Ronaldo, this prime time Manchester United. And to be walking off that field there, it was a really strange feeling because it wasn't normal. Like, City don't win at Old Trafford, not in the Premier League, yet still there we were doing it. And I remember, I'll never forget, as we were walking out through the corner just near the Stretford End, a fan ran around two stands, really angry, and then met us at the tunnel and gave us so much abuse. And it just felt beautiful because we'd earned the right to be hated. And I thought, this is fantastic. So that was probably the most memorable one for me. And it was a 2-1 win that day.
No, that's a nice one. Did you have any memorable
things? Well,
not as poignant as that, right?
I think what's memorable is that Nadim was so happy that people were yelling negative things at him. It's like, oh, it was so beautiful. Yeah, well, keep it coming.
It's because he knows that
that's when you know he's made
fine.
It.
Yeah.
In the future, he knew that he'd meet you at Moreno and the bromance would blossom.
Oh,
yes.
And things would be okay.
Yeah.
Look, yes.
I love Mr. Nadim.
Yes.
It's a different kind of guy, Nadim. I love me some Nadim.
Okay. I just want to go back, actually, to talking about our teammates. And I was just thinking, because Dan is probably one of the funniest people I know, too. And my question to all of you, because you all know him, is, have you ever known anyone as cheeky to get away with the things that he says?
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think I ever have in my life.
Oh, yeah. Look, I'll tell you a quick story about Dan. It's a recent story.
Right.
We were traveling to Spain for El Clásico coverage, and we happened to be on the same flight. Now, we are in the sort of United lounge, whatever, and while we're sitting there, whatever, he is talking to everybody in that lounge. And I mean everybody. Now, the difference between Dan and myself is very simple. He talks to everybody, I talk to nobody. And so it's difficult for me to be around Dan because he's, again, socializing. We get to the gate and he, I kid you not, was talking, this is a true story, he was talking to a dog, through the phone. It wasn't his dog, it was somebody else's dog who this person, this lady, was having a conversation with the dog because she was leaving the dog behind for I don't know how, what period of time. Then busted into the conversation and then was having a conversation with a dog of a person he never had met up until 30 seconds ago. That's Dan Thomas right there. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, are we gonna get on the flight or what? Can we just get in, Dan? I don't wanna have this conversation right now, but. If you travel with Dan, that's what you get.
That's what's going to happen. Remember, I used to be his roommate. So if you live with Dan, there are some stories I actually can't even tell.
Yeah, and whatever he says it with a smile. And it's, you know, he looks like a funny character. He walks a little funny, a little quick with the collar popped up. And so you just kind of, he's kind of a cartoon character. So yes, you're right. He gets away with saying a lot of things that none of us would.
Nadim's giggling away and nodding away while we are having this conversation.
Yeah. The reason is, the very first time I came on this show was before I was actually signed, and it was to do a segment about RSL. And I remember I was on this side of the camera, just in my house, and we were recording just like a 5-minute segment. And he was just staring at the camera. And now that I've been on the show, I understand why he does that and whatever. But he's just staring at the camera before he started recording. As we recorded, he was like being really serious. And I thought, this guy is so weird. He's the weirdest guy I've ever done anything with. And then all of a sudden I met him in real life and I saw him through the context of the overall show. I was like, I completely misjudged him. But honestly, first impressions, I was like, huge, huge issues here. This is probably not going to work out for me.
Gav, has he been out for dinner with you?
Oh, has he?
Yeah. No, we've been out. We got the various Champions League finals. We've had the various Dan stories. I just remember, and you can say this, that Dan's often mentioned the fact that, you know, Mrs. Thomas is Brazilian. And I think he tells a story of how, you know, Brazilians have a certain image, a certain idea of fun and samba, and they're happy, delightful people. Talked about the time that she said, oh, why don't we go to Brazilian church? And he imagined that Brazilian church would be, well, more Brazilian than it was, because in the end, it wasn't a lot of fun at all. There was no dancing, no socializing. He couldn't go around talking to everybody. It was actually a lot of praying and singing and hymns, and it was very, very serious. So, yeah, I just remember his like disappointment when he's telling me about it.
My last one, just to end it, is I always remember there was a guy at work that we used to try and avoid asking a question, because if you asked a question, if you needed help, right, it would take like at least 6 minutes for him to answer any question.
Right.
So but sometimes you really had to ask that question because you really needed help. Right. He was a local in Spain. And one day he started off on one of his rambles and Dan just said, Luis, is this going to be another one of those boring stories? Because if it is, you can stop right now. And everyone paused and thought, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? And then everyone just laughed.
Yeah.
So as we say, Dan Thomas really can get away with anything. And he'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah. Next he's not time. Dead. This is not.
This is
this is not a eulogy.
We're just loving our Dan Thomas. He's back tomorrow.
He's still with us.
He is still with us. He will be here on this very show, ESPN FC, and answering your questions and no doubt making fun of all his pundits on tomorrow's show on Extra Time. Thanks for being with us.